an AppleViz original.
Hello there, and welcome to the AppleViz Extra. Today we had the WWDC 2021 keynote from Apple, where they announced a whole lot of new software in a very packed event. My name is Dave Nason, and I am joined by two colleagues from the AppleViz team, of course. We have Mr. Thomas Donville, also known as Anonymous. How are you, Tom?
Wonderful. How's everybody doing today?
Not bad. I'm tired, Tom.
I bet you are. It's getting late there. I know.
And also Tyler, Stephen. How are you, Tyler?
I'm good.
Good stuff. Did you enjoy the event, guys?
Wow.
Yes.
It was packed. It was packed to the gills. It was like nonstop. And I really and truly enjoy that. But, you know, there's lots of more. There was a lot to cover.
Yeah, sure is. And we'll try to talk through as much of it as we can and give people a good overview of what they discussed and what they let us know about and what we've learned since and what our expectations, I suppose, are going into it. We're going to have a summer of playing with betas now ahead of us, and then we'll have the release of the software coming this autumn. Okay, so first they gave us iOS 15.
Woo-hoo!
Hard to believe iOS is 15.
I know, it's 15.
Yeah. And interestingly, they led with FaceTime, which I wasn't expecting. I don't recall them doing that before. Some kind of interesting stuff in FaceTime, you know, maybe they're late to the party with FaceTime links, where you can share an event. You know, you can kind of schedule a FaceTime call and send out a link to people. They've brought in things like the sharing, I think, is really interesting as well. Tom, what did you take from the FaceTime stuff, and what jumped out to you?
Well, it's just like you. I was kind of shocked because I really hadn't heard much about what was going to be in iOS 15. So when they brought FaceTime and what was in Blue, I was like, whoa. It is late to the party. It almost got me a feeling like Microsoft Skype Teams Zoom kind of a feeling, especially when they said portrait. We had the background blurring, being able to do a lot of things you could do with Zoom. And the noise cancellation, I thought that was, or they call it the isolation. The big thing that took away from me is the app sharing. But I'm really anxious to see if this works as advertised.
Yeah, so it sounds like, the share play will be like for watch parties. That was the sort of the demonstrated example. I think they are playing a little catch up. I get a little vibe from Zoom and Teams and those other video calling solutions. One thing that surprised me pleasantly is that now you can send links for FaceTime calls, and then people on other platforms can join in the browser. Now, of course, browser communication isn't always as streamlined and intuitive as communication in a native app, but the fact that they're expanding FaceTime, I think that's a good move on their part, because I can now, assuming this pans out as described, I can have a FaceTime call with people using other platforms like Windows or Android.
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but you know, Tyler made a good point though, Dave, and that is right on. I was kind of surprised and shocked at the same time when they said you can now share your link with your Android fans or your friends and PC friends. I was like, whoa. So it's not like they're getting FaceTime and be able to initiate FaceTime, but they'll be able to join FaceTime via a web browser. That will be interesting how that works.
Yeah, well, I think I remember when FaceTime launched, they said it was going to be an open source kind of thing that all platforms would be able to use, and then that just never came true, and now maybe they're finally moving that direction.
Yeah, what I would like to see is, and I don't think this came to fruition today, but could, theoretically, given the fact that FaceTime is making this jump, is some form of cross-platform iMessage. And I know Apple has some competitive reasons why, or competitive or anti-competitive reasons for why that might not be particularly attractive to them. But as a consumer like myself, I would love to be able to have say we have in my family, for example, we have the majority are iOS users and one is an Android user. So if we have a family text stream, that's a text message conversation. So you can't use some of the group messaging features. Whereas if I could use iMessage for those types of things, if this particular family member had, you know, iMessage on their Android phone, I could take advantage of that without that person required to have an iOS device.
I love your phraseology there.
Yeah.
They have competitive or anti-competitive reasons.
Yeah, there are reasons why Apple, might not have necessarily the biggest incentive in terms of, I think there were actually emails that came out back in the Steve Jobs days that have recently resurfaced about, well, if we do that, then it'll make it less enticing for people to switch from Android to iOS. But as a consumer, that's a win for me. Yeah.
Yeah, well, like for me, and you guys probably know this from previous conversations, I don't use messages really at all because of that exact reason. You know, at least 50, probably more like 60 or 70% of the people I message are on Android. The market share over on this side of the Atlantic is slightly different probably to the US. Android is the dominant player here, so I have no reason really to use messages because WhatsApp and Signal and those and Telegram, all of them are all cross-platform, so why would I use the one that is only full-featured with iMessage people? Like, you know. And then there's also that shared with you linked to messages as well. So that's where, so if you sent me a link to an album, I could go into the music app and it would show me anything that you and anyone else has shared with me through messages, which is a really cool feature, and shows again how cool Apple can be when they link up everything that they do, that the Apple ecosystem thing. But I'm assuming, again, the friend who sent you that probably has to be on Apple devices as well, although I'm not sure about that.
No, I think you're right, Dave. I mean, you make a good point, is that although a lot of these features are awesome, if your friends and family are not all in the Apple ecosystem, they're not taking advantage of it, we'll go to these features if they don't work as advertised. I don't know how that would work. When you share the link, I wonder if that app sharing would work and things like that. Now, if you're on the iPhone, well, yeah, some of those things are cool, but I guess my feeling when I got out of this whole FaceTime thing is that I was unsure. I'll have to feel it to play with it, see if it's something I would use. I don't use FaceTime all that much other than use FaceTime audio to friends and stuff, but it is neat that you can pair up with family to watch movies and things like that together in sync. If I have a sister who's out of town and we want to do something together, I suppose that would be something that would be useful. But how often do you do that?
Yeah, I can see, and during the pandemic, there's probably a lot more of that kind of thing happening.
Exactly.
As we hopefully come out of it. You know, is it like, these are features that would have been amazing a year ago, but...
Exactly.
But yeah, I think they're still good features, and I think they'll be used, but yeah, like you say, how much, yeah, we'll see. I suppose the next thing they talked about was notifications, which... there was two main parts to it, I think. One was this notification summary, which maybe when you guys understood a little better than I did, and the other one was focus, which it does sound cool. It sounds like a sort of hybrid between do not disturb, because you can say, okay, I'm in work, I want to still get notifications from Microsoft Teams and Microsoft Outlook, but I don't want to get notifications from Facebook and Twitter, for example. Or news and sports stuff. So, you know what I mean? So you can kind of have different focus kind of groups like that set up. Did I take that correctly?
I think so. That's pretty much what I got out of it too. There's different activity modes that you're in, sleeping, work, whatever mode that you may be in, and then you'll be able to prioritize what you want to see. I think there was a moment there where they're talking about after I wake up in the morning, all these notifications will show up at once. I don't know how these things work. I do like this a lot. There's times I get so many notifications while I'm working. That would be so awesome to be able to prioritize, say I want this and these, but not any of these while I'm working. I like this a lot. I'm excited for this. I use notifications heavily.
Tyler?
See, it does sound like a neat feature because, like Thomas, I sometimes get absolutely inundated with notifications. So it's nice to have sort of profiles for Do Not Disturb where you can configure it for different contexts. Having said that, I wonder if perhaps, like other notification features or notification redesigns or overhauls over the years with iOS, I think it's going to be cool. I think I'm going to use it. And then, as it turns out, it really doesn't affect my day-to-day use. A lot of changes over the years with notifications. Every once in a while, they revamp Notification Center or the way notifications are delivered or, you know, grouping behavior and stuff. But with a few exceptions, my overall use case is not particularly, it's not particularly involved or fancy. So I find myself playing with the settings for a while, playing with new features, but then having them not really translate to everyday use and practicality.
That's true. I was thinking on paper it looks great. It's just a matter of what kind of configurations. You know, when they mentioned like Control Center at one time, you were able to add all these things to the Control Center, right? And I was so excited, and then you realize you can only add certain things, you can only add things at the bottom of the screen. So I hope there isn't some limitations. So, but on paper, it sounds great. We'll have to see if there's something that we would use. If it works as advertised, I'll be very excited about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I suppose it's how easy they make it to set up and use as well. You know, how much you'll actually invest in it. But definitely something to help me prioritize my notifications would be good. Especially, you know, sometimes the ones you really want, the messages and things like that, can get buried beneath a whole lot of news stories or something. And, you know, 4-5 hours later, you go, oh, wow, I got this message. So ways of prioritizing that kind of thing, like you say, yeah, definitely. And the next thing they announced then was live text, which does sound very interesting for our particular community, potentially, where it seems you can hold your camera up to, like, anywhere where there's, you know, text on a sign, or it'll work. I think they're pretty sure they said it works across the system. So, you know, if there's a photo on the web with text in it, and it intelligently takes that text out and turns it into, you know, readable text. So if I've understood that right, that could be really useful for us. It's almost like performing an OCR kind of function live. Is that kind of what
right? It is? No, I'm with you. When I heard live text, I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. And then he says you just kind of point it where there's text in your photo or where you take your camera and be able to take edible text out of it and make a, you can clip what you want. I was like, whoa, is this OCR? Is this going to be like, I can like look at a page and it reads it to me? You know, I'm trying to figure out exactly what, you know, this may intertwine what Apple announced a couple of weeks ago about accessibility for voiceover users. Mm-hmm. And one of those with camera being able to look at a receipt, and it would break it up into rows and columns like a spreadsheet. And I wonder if that's the same concept. So you'll be able to take, if that's true, boy, they're really up in the game on that market. I'm thinking, wow. Do I really need to use Microsoft CNAI to identify a page anymore? It's like, this is pretty cool. I could just unlock my phone, the camera's right there, push it, boom. I wonder if it works that way.
Yeah, I'm really really excited to try this one out. I have to say, I agree. I kind of thought of, is it related to what they said in that announcement on
this feature? It's, I agree. It sounds really cool. Like if I can take a picture and then select text on the fly to copy, that could be hugely helpful. For example, if I need to scan a code or a password or something, assuming it's accurate and works as advertised, that could be a huge productivity booster.
And even, I guess, you know, people send you photos that have text on, you know, we've all come across those kind of images with text on them, and often currently the current screen recognition doesn't do a great job sometimes of reading that text. So I'm hoping maybe we'll, related to this, is improvements with that.
Yeah, I think also that, you know, they didn't say this, but I kind of had in mind this would work. You know, when they did example, when you take a picture of this person and he was able to take this phone number from a restaurant from the background, that makes me wonder, because on the Global Awareness Day, they also announced voiceover is that you'll have positional place on photos. In other words, if you do a touch explore, you put your finger on, there's a person there, and if you go a little bit left, it'll say text here, and then you can actually probably read that text, or it'll say tree over here. So there's a lot of things that object recognition that's playing here. So that'll be interesting how that works as well with VoiceOver.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get more information on that over time. But yeah, it's definitely one of the more interesting things that I'm looking forward to checking out in iOS 15. Some of the maybe a couple of the less ones were up next. Probably which was like Spotlight improvements, where which will show you photos now, and improvements in the Photos app, like the memories. I think Tom, you were saying you're not overly excited about memories and add music.
No, I mean, for those with low vision, this is a totally different game. Okay, so there's what we got here. We got a lot of visual aspect things that are coming in play. And I think that's beautiful to have collage and moments and memories you can share with other people with photos and things like that, and have music. So I get that. My wife would love that. Me, as a blind person, that would have zero interest for me. And the memories, I think, is kind of neat. If you take a lot of photos and you mark them, I suppose that would be huge. I think for some people that really do a lot of photos, there's going to be some cool new feature. But for me, that has zero interest at me at all. I don't know how many people are going to be really using that.
Yeah, it's one of those things. There always has to be something improved in photos, isn't there, every year?
Exactly. It seems like they try to intertwine this photo with and the memories and the sharing, how they had this incorporated all across. It's just, wow, that's really weird stuff.
One thing you might be interested in is the wallet, which they're talking about.
Oh yeah,
more improvements on that, like having keys, ID cards for you guys in the States as well. Would that be useful?
Oh yeah. I was so excited. You can already, and they mentioned Disney in there, and I was just at Disney a couple of weeks ago, and sure enough, I was able to take my Apple Watch and go up to the counter, and I was able to use my Disney ticket and tie it to my watch. So they simply use your RFID on your watch. So I just went up, tapped it, you feel this vibration, and it just pops up on their screen that you bought the ticket. You can use that for like getting certain passes and all sorts of stuff. So intertwining with the wall even more was absolutely awesome. And I'm really excited about that security ID, as you mentioned, because I do a lot of traveling. And the one thing I hate is getting my license out or my state ID out all the time, then I have to put it back in. And you're going through that TSA line, and so it's cumbersome. So now I just be able to show my phone, there's my ID. I love that. I hope my state offers that. I'm real excited about that.
Yeah, it does really look cool. Another thing, one thing I'm actually quite interested in is the weather app, because I'm thinking maybe we're starting to really see the benefits of them purchasing Dark Sky a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Do you reckon?
Well, yeah, kind of, sort of. I'm still disappointed. Yeah, it's. I thought it was cool. It's like, wow, they're going to introduce weather maps, radars, new quality index for outside of other countries other than U.S. And the only thing it still doesn't have weather notification, as in live notification, like pop-up rain is about to come, like the Dark Skies does. I still have to use the Dark Sky app to do that. But I don't understand why they don't bake that into the weather app. So I don't know what I think about that.
Yeah, I was really kind of hoping that that was part of it, but maybe it isn't.
No.
Tyler, are you a weather app user, or do you use...
I am a weather app user. If I need to check the forecast, that's kind of my go-to these days. I wonder, do we know how these maps... I know a lot of emphasis was placed on the visual elements, like the graphics, but do we know how maps and things like that and other types of elements would be conveyed with VoiceOver, or how if such things would be conveyed?
I can't imagine them being able to do VoiceOver on that. I think maps would just be simply maps. There's no way they could just say, this is a cold front line, rain is to the right. I just don't see that happening. I could be wrong. Apple is great and proved me wrong, but I can't see. I am kind of worried about the maps overlay, because a lot of weather apps, you open up and got this weather map right there. So it's kind of,
yeah,
it's like, man,
Yeah, because one of the things about the weather app, which I like, is that it's simplicity. There's the if you navigate by containers, there's hourly forecasts, daily forecasts, and then sort of an expanded view with air quality and other types of things like that. But if there are maps and stuff, if there are other elements that are a challenge for VoiceOver to meaningfully convey to the user, that could potentially clutter it.
Hopefully the containers will keep that a bag.
Yeah, or it could well be a kind of an overlay you open up, I would think, something like a map, so you may be able to fairly easily ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. And speaking of maps, they also announced improvements to the Maps app. Again, it seems quite visual. There was something that looked a lot like Google Earth that popped up. You can look at the whole globe, apparently, and zoom in on where you want to go. But also some really, you know, they have been improving maps a lot over the last couple of years, I'm told. I don't use maps a whole lot myself, but and they've brought the new maps to a couple more countries and improved transit as well, which I think could be good for us because, of course, as not being drivers ourselves, I guess maybe a lot of people would be using public transport. But, yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
A lot of visual aspect, isn't there? Lots. I've heard nothing but lots of visual aspect, like 3D overlay, be able to see the median turns, all that stuff. The only thing that was kind of cool, and I wish we would be able to use it somehow, it would be kind of nice, but it only supports in certain cities like San Francisco and New York, where you take your camera and just go around you, and then it will know positioning where you are within the station. I thought that was kind of cool, yeah. But... I can only hope that somehow they are able to help us with VoiceOver. But I'm thinking, hey, welcome to being blind. That's what we do. We don't know where we are. But, you know, that's kind of like an indoor mapping kind of a thing. I know Google Maps started this, or they at least introduced it probably a couple months ago. They were saying the same thing. This was, they were using a shopping mall inside and where you could just take your phone and just go around and they could tell you exactly where you are in the mall. And then from there, you can do directions to where you need to go. I hope that's not all visual. I hope there is some sort of a walking direction. That would be nice.
Knowing Apple, I would guess there will be a spoken aspect to it. So,
That's the only thing I got out of Maps. Now I'll choose to trust them that there will. Yeah, that's the only thing I got out of Maps, though.
Yeah, and I think that was pretty much... the majority of stuff for iOS. There was quite a lot there, but it's a lot of little things at the same time. It is not the same quite major overhaul, I guess, that we got last year because we got the new widgets and the app library and everything that was new last year. So this year is naturally, it's more tweaks to different apps and services. There were improvements to AirPods where they talked about these kind of better noise isolation, I guess, is it? And, you know, to help you zone in on the voice, but you can also switch it off and hear the ambient sound if you want or something. Find My for AirPods, so you can actually, if you've dropped them, you can actually find them now, hopefully. And more spoken notifications. I don't know, do you guys use... Tyler, I don't think you have AirPods. Do you? Do you?
Or Tom, I do not.
You have them?
The couple of things I got in the AirPods...
I know, Tom, but...
Yeah, the AirPods, what I got out of was, it was interesting that they actually focused or even mentioned that for those with mild hearing loss, some of the things that will be able to help you is that it's now bi-directional. So if somebody's talking in front of you, you can just kind of look forward to them. You can be able to hear that better with noise background removal. I thought that's pretty slick. So anybody that has a mild to moderate, so they're kind of making like a low-end hearing aid. So I think... that is huge to me. I think a lot of people could probably take advantage of that. The only thing I didn't like about the AirPods was the mention of the Siri notification. So if there's a notification on your iPhone, it will automatically announce it to you by Siri. So you can ask Siri the notification. I don't know how that's going to work. Like, what are my notification or reach it to me? That part was kind of vague and fuzzy.
I guess it'll be... I get the impression it's very like how it works with messages now, which already can have that interrupt whatever you're listening to and read the notification out from messages.
Oh, okay.
But you'll be able to do it with more apps. But it'll work with, you know, if you set Do Not Disturb or if you set focus mode, so it only reads these particular ones, it will...
How interesting.
You know, work alongside that. But I will probably switch that off if I'm listening to a book or a podcast. And I keep getting, like... notifications in, it would drive me a little crazy, so I'm not sure I'd use it, but yeah, it's a good option to have.
Yes.
I do like the separation alerts as well, because, you know, AirPods would have a tendency to fall out of my pockets or something, you know, and I'm in somebody's car,
yes.
So I'm going to get out of the car, and it's like, oh, where are my AirPods? And if it starts beeping.
That was amazing. The separation, I love the separation. I you know, I mentioned that in my... And when they unleash, I want that for the AirTags. If, you know, I put a backpack down and I step away from it, I want the same separation alert. I wish they would do that for that as well. But the AirPods, that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of wrapped up the iOS section. And then, so yeah, are you looking forward to trying this one out?
I am. There were some few things that were not really discussed a lot. I am really... curious about the iCloud Plus. There was a mention about iCloud Plus being more of a privacy that you have your hide your emails options where they generate emails. So if you're on a website, it gives you a throwaway kind of an email. I thought that was pretty sweet. And the internet relay protection, which allows you to kind of spoof your IP so they don't know exactly where you're from so they can't fingerprint you. And that being a free service along with your iCloud subscription, I was like, wow. I'm really anxious to see if that's just Safari base only or if that is all across the phone. I'm really curious how that works.
That was really just, they mentioned during it, the pitch, they mentioned it was a subscription. So I was sitting there waiting, here we go, how much is it going to cost? And then it's the same
price. I think, same price. So I don't believe, and I could be wrong about this, but for people on the 5 gig plan, I don't believe they get it. But if you're paying for storage, then you get iCloud Plus automatically.
Like I'm on the 99 cents, you know, 50 gig. Plan, so
right, so am I. I think that includes it, so that'd be kind of cool. And the other note that I thought was really great is the Siri being able to do more onboard voice recognition. So, and I couldn't believe that I didn't realize when you open up apps and things that it's using Wi-Fi internet. I mean, that was my
everything goes to the server.
Wow,
absolutely everything goes to the server now.
I don't know why I didn't know that. I thought maybe certain things did, but now that's going to make things much faster, being able to request
things.
I was excited to hear about that. So that was another option that they brought up.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Siri, that's a huge difference. Now, if you even turn on airplane mode, you'll see if you try to do anything at all with Siri, she'll just say not available. So being able to it makes perfect sense. Being able to turn on Do Not Disturb or not dark mode or open an app without having to go to the server. So yeah, definitely good.
Mm-hmm.
We then moved on to the iPad, which I think it's fair to say was a lot of people's expectations was that this was going to be iPad's year. That last year was iPhone's big, you know, refresh kind of year, and this year would be the iPad. A lot of people, you know, they release these amazing devices, like the M1 iPad is, the new iPad Pro is, and even I have the iPad Air last year's one. It's an amazing piece of hardware, but people feel a bit limited by the software. So the hope is that that will step up this year. What they brought us was actually kind of what we saw on the iPhone last year. They brought us widgets, which I think is a good thing that the widgets can go anywhere in your home screen now. They don't have to be in that little slide-out drawer on the left. And they can be bigger as well than they can on the iPhone, which makes sense on the big screen. And the app library. So, Tyler, are you a fan of those features on the iPhone? And would you use them on an iPad? Do you think they are what people are looking for on an iPad?
I do like app library if I'm trying to sort through and clean up some of my apps. I can view them by category or by alphabet. Or if I maybe want to keep an app but don't want to see it on my home screen, don't want to be cluttered with stuff on my home screen, I do like the app library. widgets I really don't use. It was one of those features where I was excited for last year. Like, I could view the weather forecast on the home screen. But in my everyday life, I used them for a while, and then I kind of got tired of them. So I just reverted. I took my widgets off. But, yeah, so I like the app library. Widgets I don't use a lot, but I think I don't have an iPad, but for people who do, I think they'll be welcome features, because I think iPadOS is sort of playing catch-up to what iOS 14 was last year.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Thomas?
Oh, honestly, my first impression, I felt let down. I'm kind of shocked that these weren't introduced last year through the iPad. So everything that we got for the iPhone, like you said, is now on the iPhone, now onto the iPad. Yeah, I think it's kind of cool, the widgets and app library being introduced in the iPad. But I was, you know, they kind of delve really heavy into the multitasking, where the widgets we can have, like, they can say, oh, this widget could be your Apple TV over here, or your stock. And in reality, a year later, a lot of us aren't using widgets as they wanted to. Or I should say, I've read that the Apple is kind of disappointed their developers haven't really taken a big advantage of it. But it is kind of cool that they have larger widgets. I don't know how this is going to work out for voiceover users, because it's already a little bit confusing when it was on the iPhone. I can't imagine on the iPad, and especially all this enhancement of multitasking. I am really curious if people use that are completely blind, those who are low vision. I think this would be great. You'd be able to do a lot of those things. But overall, my feeling was a letdown, because not one thing in there you can tell me is utilizing the M1 chip. I'm still kind of let down that you got this huge horsepower under the hood and not taking advantage of it. That's where I'm kind of let down.
I think the widgets they just made sense, and surprisingly they weren't there last year. I do use widgets a little bit on my phone. Whether I will on the iPad or not, I don't know. The app library, I think I was saying to you before, that was that I don't like all those categories that Tyler mentioned, because I don't think they're very well organized. Like, you know, you can be looking for an app and it doesn't turn up in the category you would expect it even to be in. And yeah, I don't find them that useful. But I do love having a very quick way to just get to an A to Z of all my apps, so that I can just have a nice clean one home screen, or maybe two home screens of apps, and then have everything else just in the app library.
True.
Easy to get to. Just like on the Mac, I have, you know, certain things in the dock, and then I just have the apps folder, press, you know, Command Shift A, open the apps folder, and that's where anything else I can find very easily. So I think that kind of thing is good, but I think it needs further refinement. Multitasking, yeah, be interesting. I don't know if people, how much people want to use it, but multitasking has felt like one of, just easier on Mac, and what they need to do is make it as easy on the iPad as it is on a Mac, if you're going to, like you say, take advantage of that horsepower, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you use, so let me ask you this, do you use multitasking or slide over on the iPad at all?
No, it's too convoluted.
Right?
You're like,
so I wonder.
Swipe up down quickly to bring up the dock, then use the rotor to open it, and then choose, do you want it on the left or the right, and then choose it to bring it into mid. Like, you have to go through about 17 actions, it feels like, just to get out of place, you know?
The only cool thing I thought that they introduced was, if you open up the app switcher, you can take one app and drag it on top of each other, and then automatically multitask and puts it up in a split screen. I thought, well, if it's that simple, that's great. I am curious about when they said they enhanced it or improved it. What does that mean for us? How many more steps is it, or how many less steps it is?
I think it's hopefully less steps, because they said, like, now when you're in an app, there'll be a control there on the screen that you can choose to, say, open another app and slide out. You know, so I think they have made it less convoluted. We'll see in time, obviously, but I think that was part of what they were trying to do here, is make it less convoluted and easier to use.
You're probably right. Was there one thing in there that's going to utilize the M1 chip, the pure power? Any of those features? No. I was just like, where is it? Left hanging.
I suppose people were, again, a lot of people were asking for the pro apps. They want Logic and Final Cut and Xcode. We didn't get Xcode, but Swift Playgrounds can now, they say, create an app from end to end, which is interesting.
I read something after the keynote that there are improved keyboard shortcuts for the iPad. I don't know what that means. I don't know what those shortcuts are, but that could, when I had an iPad, I found more multitasking so convoluted because on the Mac, I always use keyboard shortcuts, whereas the iPad at the time didn't have it. That's why I didn't find it very useful as a multitasking device. But if there are,
No, you're right. They did mention that there was a lot of keyboard shortcuts for all those multitasking. So maybe you got a good point there. If you're a keyboard user, maybe that's where it's going to be utilized the most. It's not going to be something that a faint of heart for if they don't use a keyboard experience.
Yeah, there was one line they did just say lots of new keyboard shortcuts, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't really explain them. But that was one of my big asks going into this was. Because I got the iPad Air last year and I got the Magic Keyboard and I love it, but there are restrictions and I just want them to, I was hoping they would improve the keyboard support further.
Sounds like you are.
So you really can't use it as a laptop, and I think that's I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that they've done that. There are big issues though with keyboard use still, like for example, you can't use. I don't know if you guys have ever tried to use an Excel sheet or a Numbers, Google Sheets, any spreadsheet app with VoiceOver and a keyboard. Can't be done. It literally cannot be done still on whether it's iPhone or iPad.
That's terrible. That's
come on. So I'm hoping things like that will be fixed as well, but maybe that might be another year out. But I definitely think it's moving. It's definitely moving in the right direction, and it is so snappy. I know I don't have an M1 Mac. I have an Intel Mac, but the iPad with a keyboard is 10 times snappier than my Mac is. You know, Apple also made quite a big show of Notes. Improvements to Notes where you can have links and things like that, more, and tags and things like that in Notes, but also Quick Notes, which when they were showing it, they seemed to be using an Apple Pencil the whole time for Quick Notes. So I'm not sure, are Quick Notes just an Apple Pencil thing or are they for everyone? I didn't quite.
That is a good question. I don't know. It's like you said, all those examples was with an Apple Pencil, how he was able to open up a web page and to take a certain thing out of it and put it in the Quick Notes. And that Quick Note, the Notes is like, they want that to be system-wide, like you're able to take from messages and drag it to the Notes and all sorts of things. I am curious about that. It sounds like it's an iPad exclusive kind of thing? Is that my understanding, this whole Notes system-wide thing?
I'm not sure. They mentioned Mac as well. But
true. So it might
be don't know if it's just that they're readable everywhere, I guess. But
Yeah, there's so many things they cover. It makes you ask, does this work on the iPhone? Does this work on the Mac? Etc. And there was just so many little things that I think a lot of these features, like the Notes, I'm going to have to just play with it, see if it's something I would use or if that's just something gimmicky. A lot of people that like to take note-taking or just jot down something that might be useful for them. They definitely are trying to push more productivity in every app. They mentioned like how I thought it was kind of cute, and it's more of an iOS, but it's also for iPad too. But, like messages that you want to save for later to read it, it will show up in your Apple News. I was like, oh, man. I was like, oh, I don't know. They're really trying to push you to use their built-in apps to access all these different things. I thought that was interesting. Again, those that don't use Apple News or anything like that, we're not going to really see that features, such as Notes and stuff. They're really trying to push you to use their baked-in stuff. That was for sure.
100%. They really went all in on the ecosystem this year.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, how this works with this and how that works with the other one over there.
Right. It was like it was all intertwined. It was kind of like they were trying to make a WhatsApp competition, but it involved multiple apps to do it. FaceTime / messages / all that to make the same thing work.
Yeah, absolutely. They made a big play of privacy again. It's a massive theme for Apple, isn't it? This the privacy side of things.
I'm all for it. I love when they talk about privacy. I think it's a good push, and I really like how you're able to now go in and get a summary of what apps is using which privacy options, like location, keyboard, Bluetooth. I thought that was interesting. It's kind of like similar what we have in Safari, that the tracking summary. So I'm anxious to see what that's like.
Yeah, definitely. There was something about even you can see where they've shared, you know, what URLs that they've shared that information back to or something. I don't know. I'm not quite... That seemed quite interesting, I thought.
It is interesting, but what can we do about it? I mean, do they give this option to just, like, don't block that? I mean, I didn't get that sense, like, yeah, I'm able to read it, but it didn't say anything about what I can do about it.
Are cookies... cookie menus a big thing in the US? Because over here, literally every website I go to, every news article I open that's from a different source, I have to either agree to cookies or manage my preferences. And it becomes to a point where you're like, I want to manage my preferences and say no to some of these cookies, but I'm so tired of going in and doing this that you end up just saying, okay, accept them. Just, you know, I don't know, is that a thing in the US? Or?
Yeah. For me, I found that it's not like a, it's just a little banner at the top of the web page. It's not a dialogue. You can keep it up and I can still read the page. But sometimes if I come upon it, if I want to clean it up on the screen, either manage preferences and say no, or if I'm in like private browsing or incognito mode, I'll just say accept.
Yeah, I think you can just ignore it. Mine does pop up at the top, but I just ignore it. I don't know if that automatically default to like block or what. You know, the other mention they mentioned to iPad was Safari. I know they mentioned it in the Mac especially, but it also kind of works across. I'm really excited about extensions. I was like, oh my gosh, finally. I've always said I want Safari extensions. I want extension. And this makes me wonder, because the other day I was reading that Google, Microsoft, and Apple were going to come together to come up with some consortium on web extension, meaning that the one web extension will work across platform. And I was like, this is a final thing. And I think this is just part of that going along with that article. I think why they mentioned that. And I'm really excited for that. And then Slimline Safari too, right? I'm not sure how that's going to work, because they mentioned they slimlined how the Safari looks with the tabs and stuff.
Especially on the Mac side, they mentioned it, but probably on iPad as well. I hope they haven't hidden things that I actually use behind an extra button. So, you know, just say you had the back button used to be there, and now you have to select more and then go back or something. That would kind of be irritating. But they sound like they definitely wanted to visually kind of clean it up and, you know, make it a bit of a simpler interface across all the all the platforms.
It's all visual stuff again.
Yeah. The extensions, you're right. It's interesting. I don't really use extensions. Do you use extensions at the moment, I would say, even on your PC?
Oh, definitely. I use extensions heavily on my PC. There's a lot of reason why I do it. I use lots of extension for different things, and so I would love to have that on my Safari.
Is there anything in particular you can see that you want to bring across to your iPad or your iPhone?
Extension-wise? There's a lot of ad blockers, really great ones that will eliminate a lot of these things. The ad blockers is a big one. Eliminate a lot of images. I do a lot of Wikipedia stuff, and all those end links drives me bonkers. So I have a special Wikipedia extension where it removes those links, so it reads it a lot easier. Just a lot of privacy initiation in there, cookies and stuff like that. It cleans it all up. It just makes it really beautiful, and I never get... My wife would get malware viruses all the time just doing drive-by surfing. And ever since I introduced a few extensions, it eliminated all that. So I'm a huge fan of extension for privacy and keeping things down.
Another thing they made a big splash about was health, which, again, it's a theme we've seen in recent years that they're going after that. There's some cool stuff in there, isn't there?
You know, this is one of those things that people are going to use or don't use. I use health a lot. I think it's great. There's a lot, you know, they're really pushing on health a lot, you know, especially with your doctor. I thought that was kind of interesting how you could be able to share certain health aspect in data to your doctor or vice versa, where I can get my cholesterol report from him, and it will make it easy to read and understand, because a lot of those lab results don't make any sense to me. It's like, it's just a number. I don't understand what this means. But apparently they're supposed to make things easier for you. One thing I really liked about the new health area, too, is that I'm able to share this so I can see my mom's health and get alerts from her if different heart detection and stuff. I thought that was pretty cool. Again, I think that's going to be niche for certain people and not. But there's a lot of things in there I really, really like. And I think we'll probably talk about that when we get into the watch. I imagine that would be next, and that will kind of tie into that.
Yeah, well, we can pop into the watch now, really. That was next up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there wasn't a huge amount really in there, was there?
No, they focus on the health a lot. And, you know, the one thing I really like on there, I noticed it a couple months back, my wife pointed out, was the stability, the walking steadiness. And I didn't know that was already in there. And I looked and I was like, yeah, it's already in there. There's a limited form on there, but it'll tell me that for example, I looked at my wife. She tends to walk more on her left foot. It will tell you that. You tend to walk more on your left, they can tell, and your stride are not equal from right and left. And it can tell if you are having balance issue. In mine, it shows me that I walk just right, perfectly lengthwise and stable. I don't wobble like a penguin. So basically what they did, they enhanced it and making that more of a study. So it would say, hey, we noticed a trend that you seem to start losing your ability of balancing. So you might have some fall risk. I like that.
Yeah, that's clever.
We're getting old. I'm getting old, so. What about you, Dave? Did you get much out of the new health stuff for the watch?
Huge amount. I think you're right. Like the health, those new health kind of things are great. The more things it's able to track. There was mention of sleep, more sleep.
Tracking
improvements as well, which is kind of cool. I'm always kind of interested in that side of things as well.
You have always been liking that sleep tracking thing. Because of that new feature, I think I definitely will try it, because I like how it says it will track how your breathing rhythm is at night. And there was some new things about it that I was like, wow, I wonder, sleep asneck, it would be on there next, like if you had that issue. And I don't know, but some of the stuff is really interesting about the sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't tended to trust the sleep thing, but I kind of find it interesting at the same time, you know what I mean?
I think overall the watch is just going to be, like you said, it's just going to focus on a lot of health aspect.
Yeah, that's really. And I mean, before this, I kind of was going into it, even trying to think, what do I want from the different platforms? And when I came to watch, I was like, there's not really much I have to ask, really. You know, it's a watch. It tells me the time. It tracks my fitness. What else do I really want in terms of improvements? So, you know, it's good.
Yep.
I hope it keeps being good. You know. And the next big area they moved on to was home. There had been rumors of something called Home OS, which I didn't at least hear them mention, but they did definitely talk about the home kind of area. They talked again about the keys that you can use. Within Wallet, they mentioned that again. Some improvements around Siri and how Siri on the HomePod works well with Siri with your Apple TV as well, and you can ask your HomePod to play things on the Apple TV, that kind of thing. One minor hardware announcement, actually. I know I had said that there was no hardware, but the HomePod Mini is coming to Ireland, guys.
I said, Ireland? Whoa! Yay! The HomePod Mini is coming to Ireland. You know, there wasn't a whole lot in here. They really focused on HomeKit quite a bit, and rightfully so, because this was another thing they announced before WWDC, is that, once again, I think this is well done with the web extension, is that Google and Microsoft and Apple and Amazon are all teaming together to come up with a consortium for HomeKit. So this is very welcome, and they mention it in this. It's called Matter. So once they incorporate Matter into the HomePod, the Home OS, that means that we'll be able to use Siri across the platform. So if you have a Nest like myself or a Ring, we'll be able to use that finally and through Siri. So this is a very welcome thing, and I'm really glad, and I'm shocked that Amazon and Google would do this, but they're actually the first people to go in to introduce new product to take care that will take advantage of the matter. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah, me too. I think it's the home stuff has been so difficult up to now. You know, you pick something up and it's like, will it work with the Google thing? Will it work with an Amazon? Will it, you know, just
right.
Figure out which thing to buy just to yeah. be able to buy something and know it'll work.
Yeah, you know what sucks, though? You have to buy it all over again because there's not going to be a simple software update or firmware with your existing stuff. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. See, I've always wanted to get into the smart home, you know, get smart home stuff. But one of the things that's held me back is just the helplessly fragmented market.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff, but some stuff only works with Amazon, and some things work with HomeKit, some things work with Google Assistant. It's not very unified, so I think this could really go a ways toward, because I've like a thing about even getting something as simple as like a smart plug, or you know, to sort of wade in slowly into the smart home ecosystem. But with the fact that if you want a HomeKit home or an Amazon home or something, it's there's very little interoperability at the current time, so this could go a ways to addressing that.
Well,
it's a multi-year project, I suspect, but.
Oh yeah, it'll take a couple of years, and to our listeners, I do have a Google Nest, a Ring, and a Solo smart plug is available to sell right now, so I can get this new stuff. So if you're interested, call me.
They did say as well, Siri will be able to be on third-party devices. Did I pick that up right?
I heard that. I don't know what or where. It's just I was like maybe Sonos and other. I was like, wow.
But then I think they said there has to be a HomePod or something in the house for still to be the center. But maybe I picked that up wrong. But
you almost think that with Apple's way, it's going to have to be tied or something. It's not going to be like true independent.
Yeah, but the home stuff. I'm in one of those situations. I'm in a rented apartment. I can't really do much when it comes to home. There is no. You know, the doorbell is like, you know, you have an apartment block, so it's not control. The heating system isn't really within my control to be rewiring. So all I have is smart plugs anyway, but I'm always jealous of those people that have stuff everywhere, you know.
Now you just get yourself a smart plug and say, turn off Mac.
Yeah.
I feel like that's good for like a air condition. Like I've thought about these smart air conditioning units that I've thought of, you know, especially now in the summer where the weather, we just get, Maine is not not known for being a particularly hot climate, but that we get some pretty hot days in the, you know, in midst of summer. And so I've thought about, you know, are these smart ACs any good, or is I could get a smart plug and connect my existing unit, my existing just old, you know, window AC, and say, tell Siri to turn on the air conditioner, turn off the air conditioner, or even put it on a schedule so it gets cold at night. So I like to turn it, I'd like to have it turn off, and then in the morning have it turn on just by the power of a smart plug. And that's what sort of enticed me into, you know, it's made that sound very fascinating to me.
Yeah, that's what I use smart plugs for, electric radiators, just for heating the place in the winter.
Yeah.
Just very easily, even when I'm out of the home, because it connects to my
like
own
fans. Yeah. Use them for fans and space heaters, and some people use them for lamps.
So it is. It's good. And then we came, after the home, we came to macOS. I didn't catch if it was a number. I assume it's at macOS 12, but it's macOS Monterey. Monterey? I don't know how to say
Monterey. Monterey, yep. It is Monterey. Monterey, California.
Yep. Yeah.
That whole Mac thing, boy. I'm anxious to hear what you guys have to say to that. I was kind of... there was some aspect of this area I was interested in. I mean... Again, they bring in over a lot of different things over to the Mac, like Quick Notes and all that. So, you have to have this ecosystem, and the continuity was kind of a big thing. One of my favorite things...
Universal control.
Yeah. My favorite was that he put down the iPad next to the left side of the Mac, and then he was taking his mouse to the left side, and then his mouse would magically appear on the iPad. I thought... how cool is that? But again, I was like, oh, wait a minute, as cool as that is, I'm never going to be able to use that.
I can't imagine how that would work with VoiceOver. But I definitely think it sort of plays into this whole idea of if you can run an iPad app on a Mac and a Mac app on an iPad, especially with the M1 chip, and the continuing transition to Apple Silicon, I think that's really what they're pushing with this feature, the universal control.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can use the same keyboard and the same mouse for two different devices. I'm not quite sure how that would work, even as a VoiceOver user. Can you press a button and it'll switch from controlling one to controlling the other, or is it more to do with when you move the mouse across? So I guess we'll find out in time. He was even dragging and dropping things. So he's like picking a file, I'll say, up on the iPad and moving it across and dropping it down on the Mac.
That was pretty cool. I mean, you got to grant that was pretty cool how he was able to take his project and then drop it into what was he using? Final Cut, for example. He just dropped it on there, or he dropped it all across the device at the same time. I thought, wow, that's really cool. Again, a lot of the features in the Mac were kind of like really neat, but I'd be curious what Tyler has to think about if any of those features, I could call them lackluster features for us to use.
Well, again, I can't imagine how drag and drop would really work with VoiceOver. Drag and drop with VoiceOver, especially on the Mac, it could use some work. I haven't had the chance, because it just came out today, I haven't had the chance to do any sort of testing with this new version, but I know that's an area where it's, I mean, not that drag and drop on Windows isn't that great in my opinion either, but I feel like drag and drop is not a pleasant experience with screen readers. I do like how they do it on iOS when it works, when it's reliable with the rotor. So I wish they would bring that to Mac, especially with, in Big Sur, they increase the prominence of the actions menu with VO command space. So I would like to see some movement in that direction with drag and drop. I think that's where they could really, they could put more thought into the feature they had. They introduced it actually about 10 years ago now with OS X 10.7 Lion, where you could mark an item with VO comma, and then you can either use either VO shift comma or VO shift period to drag it before the voiceover cursor, on the voiceover cursor, or after the voiceover cursor. I think it's a very clever trick and something that's been sort of, I think that's where got the idea for iOS. It's just not convenient with all those commands when you can use the rotor instead. And at the current time, it's not reliable. So I think that's where they need to do some work there. But as far as some of the other features, I mean, Shortcuts is coming to the Mac.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Automate, they're transitioning gradually from Automator. Automator is still supported, is my understanding, in this version. It's still supported, but Shortcuts is sort of, they are moving in that direction. And I understand that you can import your existing Automator actions if you use that feature. If you use Automator, you can import those workflows into Shortcuts. I don't use that. I don't use Automator on my Mac, so that won't be of much use to me, but I'd be curious to see if I could sort of automate some of the tasks on my Mac with the Shortcuts app, because I do use it on iOS. I use it to, if I go to McDonald's, for example, I have a shortcut programmed in where I can tell Siri, order my usual, and it just comes up, the app comes up in the bag with my sort of the order that I have configured comes up. Now, obviously, that I won't be doing that on my Mac because I don't travel with my Mac. But there are other things, like if I make an audio recording, for example, on my iPhone, I will have the volume turn up, so for the mic, and I turn Do Not Disturb on so I don't get notifications. So, I mean, that's something that could work on the Mac. So I am excited for that and see what that feature has to offer.
Yeah, I think Shortcuts coming to Mac was one of the... I suppose I don't use it that much on iOS, but it's one of those, I don't know if you're the same, Thomas, but I always have the intention to look into it more and use it more, but I've never quite got around to it.
And also, Focus for notifications, Focuses, is also coming to the Mac. It's good for productivity. If I'm working, I can set from on one particular device and I decide I don't want to get certain types of notifications, I can choose to switch to that profile. And I believe that if you choose to switch to a profile on one device, your other devices will pick up on that and it will be synced. So if I'm on my Mac, for example, and I'm change the profile to working, I don't want to receive social media notifications, that profile, that will reflect on both my Mac and my iPhone. So then when I'm done, say it was on the iPhone, changed it back to my regular profile, it would also reflect on my Mac.
You're right. I mean, if you stay in the same ecosystem with the Mac across, it's going to be fantastic. And yeah, your focus is going to be the same across. They also talked about the Safari, the app groups. If you're a lot of tabs open, that would be across sync. I thought that was kind of cool how you can save the app groups and define that. There are some things on there. It wasn't like anything really wow. It's like everything they mentioned that iOS from the get-go seemed just kind of went spread across the iPad and the Mac. And it wasn't like it was a standalone new feature. But nonetheless, there's a lot of cool stuff to see in the Mac, and I hope you're right. I hope a lot of those things are going to make things easier. But the shortcut, I'm with you. If I can use it on my PC, I think I would shortcut more on a desktop than I would ever would on an iPhone, because it's just a lot of the heavyweight routines and tasks. I think it makes more sense on the Mac, so I think the shortcut was long overdue.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Yeah. I think as well, the fact that things are coming to iOS and they're going out actually through the system. We're just seeing these three operating systems getting closer and closer every year, really.
The increasing parity between them. I think it's sort of a TikTok type release. TikTok as in, not TikTok, but TikTok as in last year it was a big, sort of a big update, a lot of features, a lot of changes. This year it's more, it's a little more incremental. And the only other feature that I, think is, could be promising is, two-factor authentication autofill, which could help streamline the process of app-based two-factor authentication. Like, say, what someone might use Google Authenticator or Authy or something like that, because it's more secure than SMS-based two-factor authentication. But I don't like to admit this, but I don't use app-based two-factor authentication. I've never found it particularly reliable or useful, or, you know, having a different app and linking all my accounts to it. But if I could, in theory at least, have that feature, that service autofill on my Mac and my iPhone, then, and if services choose to adopt support for it, then that could really that could incentivize it for me to transition away from SMS-based authentication to app-based two-factor authentication. I like the sound of that, but of course, I need to see it work in action before I make any final judgments on it.
So yeah, I think that that pretty much wraps up everything they announced. We said it was a big announcement, and a lot packed in there. Across all the different platforms, as Tyler kind of alluded to, it's probably not like a major update year in a way. It's a refinement year, but there's still quite a lot there, and it'll be really interesting, you know, to start playing with them and seeing how it all works. We've got, for people interested, if developers have access to the betas from today, there will be public betas available from July, and then the public release will be in September, when we will have lots of information on applebiz.com. We'll be using the betas all summer and learning all about it and finding the bugs. Hopefully most of those bugs will be eliminated by the time September comes around. We can all cross our fingers.
Nope,
any
new
that are
bugs
still there, we will. Yeah, we will try and let people know of any that we find once the release is out. Tom, I'm sure you'll be doing your usual suite of podcasts.
I will. I'll be covering a lot of things. You know, every WWDC that I've ever seen is that what they introduce and what they announce at the WWDC is probably maybe 70%. other things that we'll actually see that they just didn't announce. There's just other 30% are going to be a lot of little itty bitty features. Those are the ones I usually get really giddy about and excited. So I'm sure there's a lot more. I come away from this thinking, what does an average user out there? I think the blind community, some will come away disappointed. There wasn't a whole lot in there. But if you look at the number of features they got, there's quite a few stuff in here. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of features. Maybe not specific to the blind community, but it's one of those things that I'm going to have to get my hands on and see how integrated a lot of these things are and how it works and see if it really makes a difference. This is one of those we're going to have to wait and see kind of the things, how this play out. I totally agree, but I'm excited to see all the new features that were not introduced.
Absolutely, and who knows what else we'll come up with within VoiceOver. Sometimes we discover new little features, you know, that weren't necessarily announced to us. So yeah, we'll definitely see. So yeah, that I think does it. So thank you guys both for joining me, Tyler and Thomas. It was an interesting event and great to talk to you about it.
Thanks.
Cool. And thanks everyone for listening. And yeah, stay tuned to AppleViz for more news. Thanks, Emil. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
AppleViz podcast has been brought to you by the community of AppleViz.com. For the latest in resources and tips and tricks to get you the best experience from your Apple device, visit www.appleviz.com.